Right, welcome everybody. To start off with, we'll do some meditation together. So if you get nice and comfortable where you're sitting, and it doesn't matter if you're sitting on the floor or if you're sitting in a chair, as long as wherever you're sitting is most comfortable for you and your body, that's what matters most. So have a good shuffle around in your seat, good little wiggle, and close your eyes. And the first thing we're going to do is just take a moment right now to bring to mind that nothing else at the moment is important other than this meditation that we're about to do. So any thoughts from your day today, or the emails that you haven't sent, or the other work that you haven't completed, or the dishes that are left at home for when you come home from here to do, we're not going to worry about those right now. This is your moment, this is your time to care for yourself and to give yourself a rest from your day, because we all lead such busy lives and it's very important to slow down. So just take this moment to bring your awareness and your mind into what's happening in your body. And one of the ways that we do that is we ask our body, how do you feel? Ask our body, how does it feel right now? And you'll be very surprised that most of the time it actually gives you an answer. It might tell you that your leg is a little bit sore the way you're sitting, or it might be that your back isn't quite relaxed as it should be. And so we ask our body, how do you feel? And then we adjust our body. We do what we can to make our body nice and calm, relaxed and peaceful, giving it this caring attention, seeing what it needs. So you can ask yourself that question, body, how do you feel right now? And then find that area it's telling you about. It could be an area of tightness, an area of tension. It could just be a sore part of your body. And then all we're doing is just giving it that kind, caring attention, so that we can move on to other parts of our body. You can start at your head or go from your feet, whichever way feels more comfortable for you. And if you have to shuffle, cough or sneeze, move about, lie down, whatever you need to do to be comfortable and relaxed, now is the time to do that. There's no need to breathe in a certain way or do anything in a special way. Just letting everything relax. Your body will be full of different tensions and tightnesses from your day, from your stress, from your busyness. And so all we're doing right now is just looking at those parts of our body and just allowing them to relax. So I like to start from my head. And since I don't have any hair on my head, I go straight to my skin and my skull. And I just see how it's feeling. Is my head balanced on my shoulders? Am I leaning too far forward or backwards? And then I just adjust myself. When that part of my body is okay, I can leave it alone. And then move on to the next part. Just going through, using our mindfulness, giving some kindness, through the body. You might find that your shoulders keep rising up. So just gently allow your shoulders to drop. You might find that your back is quite tense. So just readjust the way that you're sitting so that your back is no longer tense. You might find that you're slumping forward a bit too much or you're leaning back a little bit too much. Just find that position that works for you. So I know that my shoulders have now relaxed and they're feeling pretty good. So I can move on to my arms. And if it's hard to find out how you're feeling, if your mindfulness isn't quite that strong enough, then just ask yourself that question, arms, how do you feel? What can I do to make you feel a bit more relaxed, a bit more at ease? And most of the time, your arms will know what they want. You might find that your hands are a bit tense as well, or you're a bit fidgety. Just see if you can relax your hands. You can feel the weight of your body as you're sitting on the floor or you're sitting in your chair. See if you can notice the weight of your body and see if there's a different position that you can adjust to make that more comfortable. The aim is to be as comfortable as we can so that we don't get irritated by our body later on. We can leave it alone. We can think of this part of the meditation as giving our body this time for a bit of kindness and care after ordering it around all day, after bossing it and telling it what to do. This is our time right now to treat our body like a friend. Just pamper it a little bit. And you find that when you treat your friends kindly, they can start to relax around you. And so that's what we're doing with our meditation. Treating our body like a friend. Giving it the caring attention it deserves. And just allowing it to relax. Just keeping our mindfulness here and now. Nothing's more important. If you become distracted, then just ask yourself, what am I doing? What am I doing? How does my body feel? So my hips are feeling quite good where they are, so I move on. I don't have to move too much. I then bring my awareness down into my legs, my knees, my feet, and just take a moment to notice how that they're feeling right now. After all the hard work they've done today, taking us here, taking us there, how are your legs feeling right now? Is there something you can do to make them feel more at ease, more comfortable, more relaxed? Most of the time when we do this kind of meditation, we are more aware of different parts of our body that we aren't normally aware of. We find tightness and tension in places that we aren't normally aware of as well. And that's where we give our kind, caring, sort of easing attention to. Nothing more that we have to do. Just happy to be here with our body, making friends with it. Not expecting too much from it, but to just sit here relaxed. And you'll find after a while that your body starts to feel more at ease. You start to feel a bit less tense. You can feel your shoulders dropping, your hands relaxing. All these little things we take notice of because they're important. So if you're at the point where you feel that you can leave your body alone, you feel that your body is quite happy and relaxed where it is, then all we do then is turn our attention to our breathing. And there's no need to do anything special. Just watching. Just watching the breath, not controlling. Just allowing it to find its own rhythm. And we find that when we leave our breath alone and don't expect too much from it, it'll settle down all of its own. You can watch it coming in and going out. And in the same technique that we just did with our body, we can even ask our breath, how does my breath feel right now? How does my breath feel? And what can I do to make my feeling feel more at ease, feel more relaxed? So just being mindful of how the breath feels. And then just nudging it here and there, just trying breathing in just a little bit deeper, or breathing out a little bit longer. Seeing how that feels in our mind. For some people, that leads to more relaxation, more calm, more peace. For other people, it could feel better breathing a bit shorter. So all we do is we just nudge the breath here and there. Learn how to be more skillful in the way that we are breathing, noticing how it feels after we adjust it here and there. And if we are feeling more relaxed in our breath, then we know we are doing something right. If you find your breath hard to watch, then use the same technique as before. Just ask yourself, how does my breath feel? It's the best way of bringing your attention right here and now to what's going on. Ask the question, how do I feel? How is my breath? It's like a dear old friend that you just want to be, help out and make happy again. Your breath has had a stressful day. And so we're not controlling. We're not telling the breath what to do. Just giving some suggestion here and there. And then noticing how that makes us feel. You'll find that if you can watch your breath long enough, the feeling of the breath will change. It will become more soft. It'll become more at ease. It'll smoothen out a bit more. It may even have a refreshing quality to it. So as you're taking each breath in, just try and make a mental note of how that in-breath felt. And then do the same on the out-breath. Meditation's a lot like an experiment. We change a variable here, change a variable there, and then we see what the results of those changes are. Does it lead us to more peace, more calm, or do we feel a bit more restless and agitated? A good way of watching the breath is to follow it from the point where it comes in your mouth or nose, and then where it's in the middle, and then where it finishes in your chest or abdomen. On each in-breath and then each out-breath, see if you can follow those 3 points. And you find that if you can concentrate on those 3 points, then nothing can distract you from coming out of being present in the moment. There's just nothing else that we need to think of. We're just quite happy being in this hall, not worrying about anyone else sitting around us, not worried about anything that happened during our day, just content to be here breathing. If you find that you have that soothing, restful, easing quality of your breath, see if you can send that to other parts of your body as well. We find that doing breath meditation, we can actually send a bit of our breath energy over here, a little bit over there. And that can actually help ease some tiredness, if there's still some tiredness in our body. We can actually give energy to other parts of our body. So just keep watching the breath coming in, noticing how it feels. Watching the pause between the in and out breath, and then noticing the out breath and how that feels. If you find that you're becoming distracted, that's okay. Just bring your mind back to what we're doing. Just allowing everything to settle down. One of the techniques that I find very handy for breath meditation, especially if we have a restless mind, especially after a busy day, is we can incorporate words into our practice. If we find things aren't settling down quite like we wish, so you could say on each in-breath the word peace, and on each out-breath the word calm. As you breathe in, peace, and on the out breath, calm, peace, and calm. We already have an idea of what those words mean. And so by incorporating that into our breath practice, it can help the mind to settle very quickly. You just say to yourself on each in-breath, and you can say it slower and slower and slower. Peace. And then on the out-breath, calm. So I'm just going to be quiet for a few minutes and let you try those various different things to see what works best for you. If you become distracted or you forget what to do, and just remind yourself, ask yourself those questions. How does my breath feel? And what can I do to make it more comfortable? So we're coming closer to the end of the meditation, and one of the most important things to do in our practice at the very end is to take some moments to notice how we feel now compared to how we felt at the start. What did you do differently this time? What did you change? How do you feel? Do you feel that you are more relaxed? Do you feel that you are a bit more content? Even just noticing the body not being so irritating with all of its aches and pains, does your body feel more relaxed and at ease? Just take the next few moments to notice how you feel now compared to the start. It might be that you've just not controlled your breath so much. You've just allowed it to do its thing and it settled quite easily. It could be that you've learnt how to go through your body and find those areas of tightness and tension you never found before, leading to more relaxation. Really give it a good think. Really use your mindfulness to look into how you feel now. And when I ring the bell 3 times, at the end of the 3rd ring, just slowly open your eyes and smile. I'm hoping everyone feels a bit more relaxed now after doing that, especially if you've had a very busy day. I've had lots to do. Doing the body scan meditation like that at the beginning is quite handy, because there's often so much tension and stress in our bodies that we aren't aware of that we've picked up throughout our day. And so by sitting and doing that at the start gives a better foundation for our minds to settle down and become more still as the meditation goes on. So I threw in quite a few different techniques into that one sit, just because different things work for different people. So it's good to just throw in a few different bits and pieces and see how that works for you. I find in my practice that by starting with that the body scan at the start, it really does give that good foundation. Otherwise, you could be watching your breath later on and then you start getting an itch or a pain. And then what happens when you go and move from your meditation and try and fix that itch and that pain? Your meditation's ruined. So it's always a good practice to, at the start, go through your body and treat it more like a friend rather than like a chore. Sometimes meditation can feel like it's a chore. We don't give it that sort of energy that we should be giving into it, because we all want to be calm and peaceful. We all want to find some stillness. But what happens when we want this peace and calm and stillness? We never get it.
especially in meditation practice, it never happens like that. Once you've let go of wanting that peace and stillness in your practice, you feel so nice afterwards because you're not trying so much. You're not trying so hard to be calm and peaceful. It just comes along on its own. The contentment comes on its own because we're not meddling in it so much. It took me a long time to realize that in my own practice. Speaking from experience here, I used to sit there and control my breathing. I used to sit and really want my breath and my meditation to go a certain direction. And of course, what happens when it doesn't? Who's the one that suffers? This guy. So that's all I'll say about that. I really hope that that was a bit different for you all. And it would be good if you went and tried out some of those different techniques during the week and see how it makes you feel. The biggest part about meditation practice is asking yourself those questions, finding out the causes for that peace and calm and happiness to arise. If we don't actually put in effort into looking for the causes, we never get to the end result, which is the peace and the calm and the contentment that we're all searching for. We have to be very mindful of what's the process involved into getting to there and pay a lot more attention to that so that we get there. Otherwise, you'll be sitting for half an hour fighting your mind and then you give up meditation practice. It's not for me. And then what happens when you give up trying? Meditation works. Yes, you've done it. So I'll start my talk on what started my practice 10 years ago. I was suffering from a mystery illness that no doctor, specialist, or any sort of medical professional knew what was happening. It was quite a scary part of my life because I was very malnourished and I was in a lot of pain. I was not given any answers as to what was going on. In and out of hospital getting tests done and basically not having much of a life because of the pain and other stuff that I was in. And so basically my symptoms were I was 45 kilos, so I was very underweight. From the moment I woke up, I'd be hit by this extreme wave of nausea within 5 minutes waking up without a break every single day. And then from that point, I'd spend all my whole day throwing up. And then if that wasn't bad enough, I was actually having sharp, stabbing, twisting knife pains in my intestines all day long. And so you can imagine how that would feel. It doesn't feel that great. I couldn't keep any food down. No matter what I tried, no matter what I did, the next day was always the same thing. Wake up, spend the day throwing up, spend the day on the floor in pain. I couldn't go anywhere or do anything. And it was just a really, really horrible thing. And the doctors had no idea what was going on. Over the years, I had that for 4 years, by the way, every single day. And over that 4 years, I had tests done at the hospitals where they had the cameras put inside me. And they found something pretty interesting. It didn't lead to any answers, but it was quite interesting what they found, that it looked like my stomach, I'd been eating glass. Like my stomach was all abrased and red and inflamed, like I'd swallowed some shards of glass and they were just mushing around inside, which is very interesting. And also in my intestines, the same sort of thing. I had so much inflammation in my intestines, they told me that I had literally lost the ability to absorb nutrients from my food. And at that point in my life, I was living off chips and gravy every day. It's the only thing that stayed down, and soups and Milo. So not the most nutritious of meals, but that was keeping me alive. And yeah, all these doctors, I had no clue what was going on. And it got so bad, the pain had become so bad that they put me on pain medication for it. I'm not going to tell you which one, but it's one of the high-end, really, really nasty ones. And that affected me in such a way that I could no longer read things. Because if I did, I'd end up having a seizure and then waking up on the floor an hour later with blood all over the floor from my head. So it got to a point in my life where I realised, okay, I'm not in a good way. This pain medication that I've been using to manage my pain is pretty much slowly killing me. What do I do then? What would you do when your back's up against the wall and you have no idea where to go? Well, for most people, that's when they turn to alternative things such as meditation, and that's what started my practice. Because medication wasn't doing it anymore. I was at the point where I couldn't even read a text message or watch TV, couldn't drive, couldn't do all that sort of stuff, stuck at home with my body, hating myself, and just no sort of answers in sight. So, and also the doctors told me towards the end of those 4 years that I had 2 years left to live. They said that in the course of the next 2 years, you're going to end up with a colostomy bag, you're not going to get the nutrients that your body needs. There's a pretty high chance that you're going to spend the next 2 years going through hell and that you'll probably end up dead. So for me at that age of my life, it was quite a worry, because obviously I had so much more to live for, so many more things I wanted to do. And so anyway, that's when I turned to meditation to help with my pain. And it was one of the most interesting things I'd ever done in my life. Not for the reasons you might think, but mostly because I was faced with mortality. So I was faced with an early death. And then I was also faced with going through the next 2 years without the help of any medication. And then also without any sort of chance or hope of having any sort of treatment for it. All the doctors were stumped. They had no idea. And so that began my journey with meditation, where I went up to Bodhinyana Monastery and I met Ajahn Brahm, and I started to do meditation. Now, for some of us, when we do meditation, we sort of do meditation. When our back's up against the wall and we're facing death and a lot of pain, it can actually be a very good feel for the practice. Because when we're happy, when things are going well in our life, that's when we tend to become very complacent. We tend not to investigate things so much in our minds. And our instant reaction to things like pain is, go away, get rid of, I don't want, this is horrible. Let it be somebody else's problem, anyone but mine. And I found that I was going through this real sort of narrative of, I hate this, I hate my body, why me, why is this happening? And that in turn was actually creating so much more stress and negativity around an already horrible problem. I was actually creating so much more suffering for myself than I had to. And my meditation practice had actually taught me that, it had shown me that. And you can see that for yourself. If you've had a bad day, or if you've had an injury to something, you can actually see that your reactions to those things are always in a negative way. How many of us can sit here and be in incredible pain and actually make friends with that pain and allow it to be there? It's very interesting. And that was a lot of what my practice was based upon. Getting to know my pain, letting my pain be my teacher, and then also making friends with the pain. The way I saw it was, pain is a natural part of the body. It's just a natural phenomenon that happens. But we tend to take that on as, this is my pain, and I'm going to control it, and I'm going to do my best to get rid of it. I just want happiness. I just want to be healthy. And you can see that just right there, you've got these two different views about things. And that's not really being accepting of the situation, really. You're saying that you're putting a condition on your life then, that you're only going to be happy when things are like this. But if things are like this, we're not going to be happy. And it's such an interesting take on things. So my practice was very much around learning how to accept this pain. Not just, you know, quietly just sort of, okay, it can be there for a little bit and then I can push it away. My practice was full acceptance, full contentment, happy for my pain to be there. And the most funny thing happens that when you actually accept the pain, when you're allowing it to be there, when you're acknowledging it, it's not that bad. It's not as bad as it is. There's always this mental side to our suffering and our pains in life. And most of the time, that's the thing that we can do something about. I couldn't do anything about my body. It just was the way it was. The doctors had tried. I've been caring for myself the best I can, you know, looking after myself. Okay, I've done the best I can. So what I had to do then was put my hands up and say, okay, this is just the nature of my body right now. It is just the nature of my body to get sick. I'm just that person that got sick. And there's nothing wrong with that. it's completely fine and okay to have a body that is sick. You've probably all heard Ajahn Brahm talking about, you know, when you go to the doctors and you say, there's something right with me, I'm sick again. You've all heard him say that? It's so true. Sickness is a part of life, but it's something that we tend not to think too much about. When we're faced with our early death or our mortality, it's very confronting because we don't normally think about these things, especially at a young age. Like, I'm only 30, you know, I'm still a spring chicken. So much more to live for. And all that sort of stuff would play on my mind. I'm so young, why is this happening to me? All my other friends aren't as sick and have to be stuck at home and have to worry about, you know, throwing up and being in pain like that. It's really, really hard. But I found that if I could actually, through my meditation practice, accept what was going on and 100% allow that pain to be there, it made it so much better. You can see that in your practice. When you're sitting in meditation and you have a pain in your body, what's your first reaction? Get rid of, go away. This is uncomfortable. It's that reaction right there that you've just added mental suffering on top of your mental, your physical feeling of suffering. And the physical feeling, most of the time, you know, that's why I was saying in the meditation we did before, you can move around, you can adjust things, you can give your body that kind, caring attention as best you can. But there will come a point where you can't do any more. That's just the nature of how your body is right now. And that was very much how I viewed my sickness and my health, especially the pain I was in. It's just a natural part of life. There is nothing wrong with having a body like this. There are people out there who are more healthy than me. There are people who are less healthy than me. This is just the nature of this right now. And it will change. I actually love that story that Ajahn tells about when he was in Thailand, and Ajahn Chah came along and said, you'll either get better or you'll die. It's so true. You'll either get better or you're going to die. But how are you going to relate to that? How are you going to take that on board as a teaching of wisdom in your life? Like, from now until the day you die, you're going to experience stuff like this. Some of you guys are going to get sick to the point of that. And how are you going to use your practice to be able to deal with these things? It's a great question to ask. And it all begins with the very small things. When we're sitting and we have a little bit of an itch, or our back's a bit sore, or we need a move, we can actually use our mindfulness to investigate these things for ourselves and know them for ourselves, to see the truth behind them instead of what we think they are. And there's a big difference there between what we think things are and the way that they really are. And the Buddha talked about this a lot. He said that we don't see the truth of things. We don't see the truth behind our feelings of pain. We're only looking for a good time. We don't want the bad. But if you love life, you accept all parts of your life, whether they are good or bad. It's all part of the journey. And it's what you make of those things that will help you to deal with those. So, I mean, even like today, I'm actually still suffering from quite a lot of other different health conditions. And so my practice has been quite handy in that regard, that back then I went through so much stuff. I learned so much about my pain and how to relate to it, how to make friends with my pain, how to really accept it and let it be there, that I've been through, I think, two or three other really bad chronic pain conditions since then. And so I've actually been quite grateful that I've learnt what I did. It wasn't nice being thrown in the deep end like that. A lot of us, it's like sink or swim. You can be thrown in the deep end with like something so serious like that. But it is so beneficial to be able to learn from those things. So pain really was my teacher. All the different parts of my life that were difficult, they were my teacher. The Buddha said that if you want to be free from your suffering, you need to look at your suffering, not to run from it. To run away from your suffering is to run toward it. If you want to be free from your pain and all that sort of stuff, you need to go through it. And you'll hear a lot of people who have cancer and other chronic pain conditions say the same thing. To come out the other side, you have to be willing to have the courage to face these tough times, these pains, and more importantly, the fear that surrounds the for me back then, there was so much fear. I was like, oh, well, I'm going to die in 2 years' time. I've not done hardly anything I wanted to do. I envisioned the next 2 years of my life being really, really horrible. And that there is actually a good lesson in impermanence itself. When we try and plan for things, what happens? It always comes, changes, and turns out to be different than what we think it is. I actually, not only did I get better from that specific condition, I got better really quickly. So quickly that it actually, that hurt. I put on weight so fast. My body was just started working again, and I put on weight so quickly. All the doctors were completely shocked. I had no idea what was going on. But I had a feeling that it had to do with the way I practiced and the insights that I gained from those things. It's very difficult to sort of say what exactly was the cause for me to get better, because I was doing everything right. I was doing what the doctors said. I was looking after myself, getting all the sleep. But I remember one day, it literally was like this realization I had in my mind that, yes, I'm going to die. But it might not be from this. I could have a heart attack, or I could have a stroke, or I could walk out and accidentally get hit by a car, or you just never know. And so for me, that took a lot of fear away from what I was experiencing. It took a lot of fear away from like this sort of end point in the next 2 years of death. That's all I sort of was fixated on. But it was like, once I realized that, you know, death can come at any time, it might be from this. It might not be pleasant experiencing this, but you can actually do something about it, and you can actually use your life still be a happy person, still deal with the pain, still deal with all the fear and the anxiety that comes with it, because all the fear and the anxiety that come with chronic illness, a lot of that we put there ourselves. A lot of that is made because we're afraid of something. And so there's so many different areas of work. If you're experiencing a chronic illness, there's so much like you can work with, as opposed to somebody who's very, very happy and healthy and having a great time. It takes you out of that complacency and really gives you your mindfulness, like this really sharp edge to look into things and find out how they work. And so, yeah, my meditation practice was very much around that. It was a lot of metta. Most of you guys here know what metta meditation is. Loving kindness. I like to see it as not abiding in hate. So it's actually a choice that we can make not to be negative and judgmental of things and only wishing things to go the way that we want. Real metta is fully unconditional. Whether something is going well or something is not going well, you can give unconditional metta to that situation, to your body, without any judgment. So if you're sitting there doing your meditation and you've got a pain coming up, see if you can do that. See if you can change your instant reaction from, oh, I don't like this pain, go away. See if you can actually just make friends with it and allow it to be there. But not only just that, see what sort of thoughts you're creating around that reaction. You've got so much power at your disposal to deal with things like this. It's not, we don't actually have to sit through life and just be reactive to things and experience things. There's actually a proactive way of dealing with them. And a lot of that has to do with the way we perceive life and the way we perceive our bodies, and then the way we perceive things like sicknesses, death, and all that sort of stuff, if that makes sense. We can either complain about things like I did. I was complaining a lot at the start because my expectations of life were not what was happening. And right there, just right there, you can pull that apart and you can see that my expectations were causing me to suffer more because it was different to reality. Reality is how it is right here, right now, whether we like it or not. If we want anything more or less than that, who's going to suffer for it? We are. And so for something as horrible as what I went through with that illness, you can actually apply that same thinking to it. If any of you guys listen to Ajahn Sumedho or Ajahn Amaro from in England, the way that they talk is a bit different. They'll say things like, there's a pain in my body, and the pain in my body is just like this. The feeling of pain is like this. And that's all that you say about your pain. You're not adding on to this mental sort of noting that we do. Right now there is a feeling of this pain. It feels like this. Is there something we can do about it? Yes. If there isn't, then leave it alone. That's the other thing that I found with my practice is, pardon me, we tend to control everything so much. We tend to want things to always work out the way that we want. And if that ever, well, it does always change to what we want, we are the ones that get unhappy about it. So for me, I had all these different plans for my life. I had, you know, I wanted to be able to still go to work and do all these other things. And I was literally thinking of a life that was anywhere but what was happening right here, right now. And like, I think that's relatable for most people. You know, you're going through things in your life, whether it's with relationships or health or jobs or family or other things in life. Most often we always put conditions on those things, and we're the ones that pay the price because we're not accepting things for the way they are. And so Buddhism is very much focused on that. It's focused on seeing things the way they are, not seeing things the way we want them to be. And there's a big, big gap between those two things, between seeing how things really are and then seeing what we want them to be. And so things like pain are great for pointing that out. We can really see that, yes, this pain is taking me away from what is actually reality right here, right now. And it's putting me in this alternate sort of version of it in my head that I'm creating for myself. And it's then causing me a lot of fear and anxiety and worry and stress, and even guilt. You know, a lot of people going through hard times in life with their bodies, especially, they feel very guilty. They feel like they're not good enough. They feel like they can't do as much as other people, that they are less than other people. And all that sort of stuff can play on your mind. So that's very important to be able to see that stuff in your own practice and in your own mind, is how you're relating to the pain, how you're relating to the illness. Do you see it as something that's normal? Or do you see it as something that has to be fixed? My biggest turning point, honestly, was when I learned that there was no cure for what I was experiencing. There was no cure. The doctors had no idea. So I had a realization at that point. I can either keep worrying about things, keep stressing about things, keep causing myself all this angst and mental pain, or I could just let it go. There's nothing more that can be done, and start developing an attitude of care instead of trying to fix and cure things. This attitude of care, especially if you bring it into your meditation practice, will help you immensely when it comes to dealing with painful things, not just pain in the body, but also mental pain as well. So we can actually develop this attitude of, okay, this is just how it is. This is just how it is. It's natural. We do what we can to care. We do what we can to make things more comfortable. If there's something that can fix it, then that's great. But also realize that things are of a changeable nature, and things like that might not go away. And so you have to develop that attitude of being content with it and being okay with having a body that's in pain. For me as well, I learnt very quickly how to get into deep meditation, because I had so much pain to deal with. And so that was, like, for me, a real good nudge in the right direction with my practice, to the point where you get into such nice, deep, calm meditations, your body, you can't feel your body anymore. All the pain and all everything just disappears. You have a holiday from it. It's awesome. It's like a mini retreat. you don't have any pain anymore. But you have to be able to leave things alone so much. But we don't do that. We tend to want to just keep grabbing the problems and fixing and trying to work them out and put them together this way and put them together that way, when all we really need to do is leave them alone long enough. I found that the point when I started to get better was when I did that, was when I stopped meddling in things so much. I stopped trying to control my body so much. I was able to just let the body do what it needed to do. When we step back out of the way, the body actually can do what it needs to do and find the energy to heal itself. I mean, like, you're not going to cure, well, some people might, I don't know, but you, it's not going to be like a massive cure to like cancer or something like that. But I think in my case, it was actually quite significant that I was able to go from somebody who was so sick and in so much pain, and from someone that wasn't on any painkillers while experiencing that horribleness, to be able to come out the other side relatively happy and healthy. Still had a few problems, but for the most part, I got my health back. It was short-lived anyway, because 2 years after that, I developed really bad sleep apnea. So I had a short break from everything. But things like pain, things like chronic illness, things like death, all these different horrible, nasty things that we have in our lives can actually be really, really good fuel for our practice if we have the courage to face them and look at them. And it is tough and it is hard. Especially things like death can be quite confronting. As a society, we don't tend to look at death too often. We're quite happy chasing, you know, what we think will bring us happiness. And then one day that comes around the corner and we seem to be shocked by it. So I was quite fortunate at a young age to be shown death's door. So I'll finish up there. I think I've bombarded everybody enough. Has anybody got any questions? Don't be shy. Any questions at all? Yes.
What is... Is that all? Can you... What is your personal view on the... Voluntary assisted dying.
Yeah. That is a very touchy subject. There's lots of different ways of viewing that from a morale point of view, and what is the correct thing to do. I think if it's very circumstantial, I think if the person is ready and they're suffering so much that they should have that choice. A lot of people say, oh, it's bad karma, you can't choose to do that, it's suicide and all sorts of other things. But voluntary assisted dying, it should be like a very last resort. Once every effort has been, you know, made to save that person's life and to help them get better, and if their pain is actually, you know, as bad as it can be with no reprieve in sight, then yeah, that should be an option. I don't think it should be like a straight go-to answer, but it should at least be an option for those people who are experiencing that. Yeah. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah. Very interesting talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
You said that deep meditation help you with your problem. Can I ask you, how intensive is the meditation you do daily?
Well, at that time I was practicing meditation. I wasn't practicing like I am now. Mm. So the intensity of it wasn't as in-depth as what you'd think. The real quality that is important for developing deep meditation is how much contentment, how much can you let go of, and how you're relating to pain and other parts of the body. How much are you still going out and grabbing hold of those things and trying to fix them? I learned very quickly that I had to let go of the feeling of pain. Mm-hmm. It's not mine. The pain is not mine. It's just a sensation. Let it do its thing, mm-hmm. and then it will disappear. And so I learned very early on how to do that. Just let it, just leave it alone. And then you can get into deep meditations. Oh. It's the same as just having like an ache in your back that stops you from getting in meditation. Mm-hmm. You can spend the whole half an hour to an hour fighting the pain in your back, and then it gets worse and worse and worse. Or you can develop an attitude of contentment and kindness towards it. And even just acknowledging those things is enough to help them disappear. Most of the time, that's all they want. The feelings in your body just want to be acknowledged, and then they disappear and do their thing. But we don't do that. We tend to sort of want to play with it and do things with it, and that keeps it going.
Mm. The reason why I ask you this question is, there is a book, it's called Dharma Therapy, very popular book. Yeah. It's by Mahasi Sayadaw. Okay. It's a very high, that's the Burmese monk, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. In that book, it's got cases of about 40 or 50 people in difficulties. People like having tumor, having pain, you know, whatever. You know, you can think of the thing. And then it says that if that Mahasi teaches the people, okay, if the people can meditate, okay, for more than 20 hours a day, you know, we have 24 hours, okay, for about 20 over days a month, you know, okay, yeah. And then that the problem in the book, you know, it says the meditator can see the tumor explode, you know,
yeah.
And they are cured instantly, you know,
yeah.
Like people with skin problems just instantly go yeah. away.
I've heard of many stories like that, and it can do that, but it depends. There's so many different conditions at play there. I have a friend who's had bowel cancer before, and she was so mindful of what was going on in her body, she could actually feel a lump there before the doctors could even see it was there. And so something like meditation can actually bring to light so much more than what we would normally think is possible, especially in terms of ill health and stuff like that. I mean, from my experience, you don't have to sit like 10, 15 hours a day to be able to get in deep meditation. There's so many different things going on there. Like you've got all your past karma, for example, that come into play. You've got how you develop your own wisdom in terms of your own practice determines how quickly you find deep meditation. Some people spend their whole lives not being able to get in deep meditation because there's one or two things that are stopping them, but they can't see that yet. Whereas other people can get into deep meditation fairly quickly. I think Ajahn Brahm tells quite a few stories about, especially like lay people who have sort of, attained jhanas by mistake. So, you know, it's possible. You can do it. My circumstances back then were very conducive to a meditation practice, so I was quite fortunate that it led to that. Yeah.
I think, you know, deep meditation is if a person wants quick results, you know. But who can do it 20 hours a day? That's yeah. very intense things, eh?
That's a lot.
So most of us would be, if we go into changing our lifestyle?
Yes.
You know, change all these things and then the problem goes off.
Yeah.
I experienced that before too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deep meditation is very difficult for people who... So you know the five hindrances in meditation? The five hindrances are those are the five things that stop you from attaining deep meditation. And part of the five hindrances is actually the precepts as well. So living a moral life, not having guilt, doing all those sort of things for the mind so that you have no more concerns with the world when you sit and do meditation practice. And then also learning about how the five hindrances affect your meditation practice, because it's those five things that will stop you from getting in deep meditation. And if you can actually take those five hindrances aboard and see them even in the most subtle form and then learn how to get around them, you will attain deep meditation and it won't take you 20 years. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? Oh, yep.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to say I'm really happy to hear that you're well.
Oh, thanks.
And thank you so much for sharing your knowledge. And it's a lot of information that people can relate to in various ways.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who does suffer from, I can never pronounce it, fibromyalgia.
Fibromyalgia.
And yep. She couldn't be here tonight because of the difficulty with the condition. And I was wondering when you can't sit in deep meditation and you need to go about your day-to-day life, what can you do in those moments to manage a pain if you need to, say, go somewhere or, you know, not be able to sit? Is there some things that you can suggest?
I just need to stretch my legs. My leg's going dead. One of the biggest problems with having a chronic illness and trying to have a day-to-day life is that it does limit you in what you're doing. And the biggest problem I find is that we are very hard on ourselves. We have like a big expectation, greater expectation of what we should achieve with our day. And so if you can't actually do as much as what you want, the first bit of advice I'd give is to learn not to beat yourself up so hard about it, because that negativity can actually make the pain worse. it can actually make things a lot more difficult for you. I've seen that in my own life, because I've actually got a broken bone in my back at the moment, so it makes many things very difficult. And I've had to come to terms with not being able to do as much with my day-to-day activity, and things I would normally be able to do as a healthy 30-year-old. And I found that I was actually putting a lot of expectations on myself that I couldn't live up to. I was actually trying to live up to other people's expectations of what was appropriate. So the first bit of advice would be to be easy on yourself. You are experiencing a condition that is very difficult. And if you can't do something, or, you know, even if you've just been able to go to the shops and you've been able to go and do your food shopping, or even just half your food shopping, give yourself a really big pat on the back. because those little things are successes. You should celebrate those things, but not dwell on the bad things. So your mindfulness then can actually go two ways about it. You focus on the positives and the good things that are going well, and that way you're keeping the negative stuff at bay. And by keeping the negative stuff at bay, you're doing the best that you possibly can do to give yourself the conditions for not being in so much pain and all that sort of thing, if that makes sense. Yeah. 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 No, I've got experience in this as well. for the last couple of years, I've been doing a diploma of psychology and counselling. When I went through my bad sleep apnea problem, I actually had to learn how to read all over again. Like, my body was affected so badly, and I was so badly fatigued and exhausted. And the adrenaline had actually messed up my mind a little bit. I actually had to learn how to read again, and I was in the same boat. I actually wanted to give up doing study because as soon as I sat down, nothing would be retained. I had to reread every single word 20 times for it to sink in, and it can be quite frustrating. So if it's something that she's passionate about and that she does want to continue doing, then just the best thing that we can do is encourage people to keep going with it. Because someone's suffering from chronic illness, the best thing for those people who are having a hard time is their friends and the family and all the support that they have makes a big difference. There's nothing quite like going through a condition like that on your own. So it might be a good idea to just give a bit of encouragement and a bit of support. Maybe even sit down and ask her reasons why she wants to do it and reaffirm that passion that she has. Instead of letting her continue to sort of look at the negative aspects of, I can't do this, or I'm not good enough, or this is too hard. As a support person, you can actually do that and help uplift. Yeah. 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 Okay.
I don't. Oh, Ed is on. Hello.
Hi.
when you say to let go of the pain, mm-hmm. To acknowledge it and to let go of it, are you meaning to only meditate on that pain, or as far as, say, back pain, for instance, do you still go to the physio, or?
Yeah, so you always do what you can to care for it. If you need to go to physio, go to physio. For people like me who had to go on painkillers, I never really liked to do that, but that was actually the most caring thing I could have done at that time. So you do need to do what you need to do. Do seek professional help for it. But a lot of the time when it comes to difficult pains that we have in our body, there are those two different parts. And often it's the mental part that we can do so much more about. Just because we tend to create so much fear and anxiety around those things. Like, I know with my own back that if I was to go and bend and pick that cushion up right now, I would see in my mind that there is a fear of the pain coming up. And so that would stop me from doing it. It doesn't mean that you go and do it and then let go of the pain, because that's not the kind thing to do to your body. So you have to still be as kind and compassionate to your body as you can, and do all the things that you can. So yeah, go see a chiropractor or a physio. But it's also good to actually sit with the pain. So if you feel like you're okay to do that, just find a time during your day that you can sit and do that. Back when I was working, I used to sit in the toilets on my lunch break and do meditation. especially with my sleep apnea, that would keep me awake enough to be able to finish my shift at work, a half an hour power meditation. But by doing that as well, you also gain a lot of wisdom into how your pain works, how your pain affects you, because it's different for everybody. And that's the whole point of meditation practice, is to become more wise and to see how these things work. Yeah. Is that all right?
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. And I understand that each person has their journey with whatever pain they're in. What about, what would you say in terms of chronic depression, anxiety, and especially if there's a loved one and that they really are in anguish, but
yeah,
they're not doing what they could. So it's kind of that other pain.
So again, those things, the people experiencing those things tend to beat themselves up a lot. Like with depression, you get depressed about being depressed, and then you get depressed about feeling depressed about being depressed, and it's like a never-ending circle of depression, and around it goes. And while that wheel is spinning around, your friends and family tend to drop off because it's very hard to deal with. So for those sorts of mental pains, having a really good support group, having people that understand that if someone has depression, they don't want to get out of bed that day, yes, that's fine. That is okay. As soon as you say, oh, why are you being lazy? Get out of bed, to someone who's got depression, all they want to do then is sit in bed more. They don't want to engage in anything in the world. They find it very hard to feel sort of any motivation to make something of their day. So,
if however, that person is so hard on themselves that you may be being kind and telling them to not be so hard and perfectionistic or whatever.
Yeah.
But their kind of perfectionism is so thick that it's like the only way they're seeing, I'm speaking of my daughter actually, the only way she's seeing life is that it has to be hard.
Yeah.
And it's very, I guess for myself then or anyone in that situation, it's about how I manage my pain in seeing her continually beat herself up.
Yeah. It is very tough. And things like depression, it can be very, very hard to get that person to understand from an outside point of view what they're doing. I know from my own experience, depression is a very low state of mind, like a low energy state of mind. You haven't got that energy to want to do things and deal with things. As soon as a problem in your life comes along, you just either deny it or push it away. If something becomes a little bit too difficult in life, the same thing, you just want to push it and get away and not deal with it. I think for people with depression, obviously with all the proper help that you can get these days, like psychological help and seeing counsellors, all that sort of stuff, why that is good. I think one of the best things for someone who's experiencing that sort of mind state to bring a bit of more joy in their life is to make it not about them, but to then actually try and encourage them to go and help other people. So you've probably heard already that if you're experiencing something difficult in life, the best thing you can do is actually go and talk about that to someone who's having a similar time. And then you actually generate like this bond where you recognise in between the two people that you're experiencing something similar to me, I'm not alone anymore. And sometimes that's enough to actually help quite a lot. It's not going to be like an end-all solution, but it's a tiny step in the right direction. But that very much depends on the person and how open they want to be. I find animals are good for depression. Animals can help quite a lot. Get a cat or a dog and give it a nice cuddle. And that can, even if it's just a few moments of you're not feeling depressed, it's worth it. I hope that helps.
Hello. Yeah. Thank you for tonight.
That's okay.
What helped me, I was thrown out of a car, went through the windscreen, and was my face, my head, my body was very badly injured. I was really lucky to survive,
yeah,
lucky to think, be able to to think clearly. But what helped me, I mean, being sent home in a wheelchair, was just to really stretch and love my body, just stretch for hours just to get a bit of movement in my neck, things like that. And then I discovered, I mean, I still had migraine headaches that were just excruciating and a lot of other pain. What helped was actually finding, a friend told me about the genetic blood group, I'm a B, and I followed that. My migraines disappeared, my mood swings changed, my arthritis disappeared, so many things. I was huge before that. I lost all the weight. Yeah. I now am slim all the time. And the other thing that really helped me was the coronavirus shutdown, because I had to focus on myself. I'm a volunteer teacher, and I do yoga, tai chi, all those things with other people.
Yeah.
Well, the virus made me realize to do it for myself. And so I brought flowers into my bedroom, into my home. I lit candles, the salt lamp, put on beautiful music. And I just did my meditation on my bed every day.
Yeah.
And my body healed enormously.
Yeah.
And then the music healed me, you know. So through being kind and caring, but actually focusing on myself and, you know, having, like, I brought the temple into my home.
Yeah.
And but I realized that the temple is my body.
Yes.
And it was just a beautiful time that I'm so grateful for.
Yeah. Thank you. Wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you for your sharing tonight. It's very, very heart-rending. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, well, that's wonderful that you could do that. No, it's still on. Because in those situations, we can all too easily run away from it. We can all too easily not want to face the problems that we have. And that's often the case when it gets worse and we end up actually being worse off than we were before. And so to be able to have the courage to actually face those things and to see it in that way is actually quite beautiful and really good. Yeah, well done.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story.
That's okay.
How do you know when you've reached deep meditation? Like, I'm new to meditation, but I'm at a time in my life where I know I really need it because I've had health issues, lots of things go on. Well, pretty much since I've been born, I feel I've been hit with a lot, and I had that mentality of why me, and I still kind of do that now.
Yeah.
But I've come to Buddhism, and I know that this is my time now.
Yep.
So I'm a bit like, want things now. So how do you know when you've reached that?
So one of the problems that people have when they're learning meditation is they get a little bit of peace and then they go, now what? What's next? And you've just ruined it. That's the way the mind works, always wants more. So the best way to progress in your meditation practice is to really develop your mindfulness to the point where you can feel what your meditation practice is like. We don't really want to think about meditation too much. We don't want to be sort of pulling it apart intellectually so much. The feeling and the knowing of what is happening is far more important. So if you're sitting in meditation practice one day and you actually feel a lot more at ease, a lot more calm, you feel like your body might feel a bit like more lighter and a bit more warm, or there's all different sensations that you can have. It's good to be able to feel what's going on firstly, but then also look at the causes of why that happened. This same thing as if you're sitting one day and you're quite restless in your mind and you can't get your mind to calm down. That's actually a very important lesson to learn as well. Why isn't my mind calming down? There has to be a reason why. And by using these sort of techniques of knowing what's happening in our practice, that can actually show us which way we need to be going with it, if that makes sense.
So I'm 4 weeks post-op from a major operation that came all of a sudden, out of nowhere. I'm a very fit and healthy person.
Yeah.
And I've come to Buddhism a few Fridays before that. And tonight was actually the only night that I've sat there and gone, oh my God, there's no pain in my body.
Yeah, like, oh, wonderful.
So is that obviously a sign of, I was actually sitting here going, I've got nothing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess, is that a sign of deep meditation?
Or is
that,
And you'll actually find that there's actually something that you did differently tonight that led to that to happen. Like, it's not just you didn't just wing it. There has to be a cause there for things to calm down and to be still and have less pain. And most of the time it's because you've done this. You've stopped trying so much.
Well, I was, half an hour from dying, apparently, so maybe that's a similar thing that you just, when you know you're about to die, you're like, okay, we've got to do something now.
Yeah, well, I'd keep trying, next time you sit, try and see if you can recognise the same things you did tonight. See if you can recognise the way that your body feels and the way that your mind feels. Mindfulness of the body is a great practice area for when we start meditating on our minds. It's quite easy to feel when our body is restless and in pain, and we can't ever get comfortable. So you learn how to become sensitive to that, and then when it comes later on to the mind side of it, you can actually recognise earlier when our minds are starting to become restless, and you can catch it earlier, and that way you can actually sit longer and become more still.
Yeah. One more question. When you were going through all your pain and trauma, did you go to meditation classes or anything, or did you...
Yeah, so I forgot to mention that in my talk. When I first started learning meditation, I first went to the monastery in Serpentine and then realised that they don't actually teach it there. So I've actually found out by coming here that they teach at Armidale Group, at the Armidale Hospital. And so for the first 2 years or so of my practice, I went there every Tuesday and listened to the monks giving talks. But on top of that, I also did meditation every single day. And most of the time I did meditation, it was out in the forest, away from all different distractions. Yeah, so I found group meditation quite handy. It was a good way of developing like a foundation for your practice. But the most important thing that you can do for your own practice is to get out there and do it on your own as well. It can be quite scary and it might be a bit confusing, but you get the most out of your practice as well when you can actually do it on your own without someone guiding it. You learn to be more sensitive to the mind. Yeah.
Different types of meditation, and if so, are there lots of similarities and differences between them all? That's quite a big question.
So in the Thai tradition, there's 40 meditation objects. I can't quote all of them, so I can't remember, and I'm getting a bit tired. But basically, you've got the four obvious ones of sitting meditation, and you've got walking meditation, loving-kindness meditation, and then you've got mantras. You've also got what's called kasina meditation, so that's when you've got like a coloured disc of different colours, and you look at that disc until that's all you see. There's meditations on death, but they're more like contemplations of death. You bring up different phases of the body decomposing and stuff. There's contemplations on the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. That's all that's coming to my mind at the moment. But there are quite a few different ones, but the main ones that are taught are the loving kindness, the metta. Walking isn't taught as much as it should be. And I actually love doing walking meditation. It's really good. If you've got to walk to the shop somewhere, it's a great chance to do some walking meditation. So by the time you go in there, your mind's so nice and calm and peaceful. Yeah. Was that his recent book? Yeah. Is there quite a few? Okay. Yeah, that'd be a good book to read. Because part of meditation practice, there's two sides. There's the calming of the mind, and then later on you'll learn about where you gain the insights from. So you've got samatha, which is calm, and vipassana, which is the insight that arises. And the two go hand in hand. So what I taught tonight was basically samatha meditation. But you could say that you learnt some insights at the very end when I said to you, take the moment right now to see how this meditation is, how you feel now compared to when you started. So you get a tiny bit of insight there, but it's not quite the penetrating insight of the Buddha Dhamma. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's okay. Yeah. That's very hard though, yeah. Yeah. The thing as well with that is your relationship, you'd probably have to find you've got to put boundaries in there to stop you from hurting. Yeah, and that's very hard with someone with depression. Very hard, because you can end up being hurt from it as well. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes that's all that's required for someone to realise, well, hang on a minute, maybe I should start looking at things a bit differently. But depression is so hard in the sense that someone who's got severe depression just doesn't care. They really just don't care. It's really hard for them to actually generate that energy to do something about it. I think, like, yeah, as much as you want to be able to help that person, you've actually got to put that boundary in place too. Exactly right. Yeah.
Which is a lesson for people who love those people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Any more questions? Opening the door of your heart, yeah.
It's very true with the boundary thing, that tough love does sometimes actually work. It worked for me, but you got to be careful as well. So it's a bit of a hard, So, but having someone, maybe not you, but someone else read that book to her, if she's not into reading, honestly, it's almost like the answer.
Yeah.
So as I'm holding the mic, I'm actually going to jump in quickly.
Yeah.
Firstly, thank you. And we spoke a little bit at the start. So like your friend, I have fibromyalgia. And one of the things I did was I actually stopped using the terminology I suffer from it. So that was the first thing I did mentally. I changed that thinking. But I'm also really interested in... It's dropping in and out. I'm really interested in your comment about owning the pain and accepting the pain and loving the pain.
Yeah.
Because I do know that when I'm having those days when I can't get out of bed and I can't move and I can't do anything, I do what you were talking about, I mentally suffer. And I beat myself up for it and I feel terrible and I can't play with the kids and all of those things. So I'm really, thank you so much for that feedback.
Yeah.
Because I'll take that on board and hopefully it'll make a difference.
Yeah, well, wonderful. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Anyone else? Wonderful. All right. Well, thanks everyone for coming tonight. I really appreciate you all coming here on your Friday night and spending some time with other like-minded people and doing some meditation. So thank you very much. And may you all have a wonderful week ahead. And have a good night.